The following episode contains material that may be uncomfortable, upsetting, and unsuitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. On July 5th, 2012, 16-year-old Skylar Neese returned home from her evening shift at the local Wendy's. She told her parents she was tired, kissed them goodnight, and headed to bed. The next day, when her father David knocked on her door, he found that she wasn't there. Now, he and his wife Mary weren't too worried at first. Skylar was a social butterfly and was often out with friends on the weekends. Only, their lives were turned upside down when Skylar didn't show up for her next work shift, and after noticing a few things out of the ordinary at home, Dave realized she was missing after sneaking out the night before. Had Skylar run away? Had she been kidnapped? Was she in trouble? Things like this didn't happen in Star City. It was a sleepy town in West Virginia with less than 2,000 residents, where most everyone knew everyone. Investigators questioned anyone and everyone they thought could help the case, followed countless leads that turned into dead ends, until they spoke to two people whose stories just didn't sit right. In January of 2013, Dave and Mary's lives were shattered when someone finally came forward confessing to the murder of Skylar Neese, leading detectives to her remains. The creepy thing is that while Skylar was missing, one of her murderers called the family asking for updates, helped put up flyers around the community, and even comforted them in their worry and grief. This is the creepy case of Skylar Neese. Fiends, welcome to another episode of Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces. I am your host, Cassie Opea. Just so you know, next week is actually the season 6 finale of Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces, so be sure to tune in because it's going to be a whopper. I know I say that about a lot of cases, but I tend to find those cases. Don't forget, though, that you can find me every Friday with new episodes once the new season begins. And if you subscribe to the Patreon or the Anchor webpage, you can do so for as little as $5 a month. You get bonus episodes every other Tuesday. You get a merchandise discount that's good in the Wiccan Fae shop at pizzaandpigtails.com. And that's good for every purchase, by the way, not just a welcome discount or a, you know, certain amount discount. You also will get a thank you swag box. And if you sign up with the Patreon, depending on which tier you choose, depends on what will go in that box. Also, I totally understand that sometimes you want to support, but you can't really commit to that monthly subscription. I do have a Cash App and a Venmo, and every little bit helps, even if it's $1, $2, every little bit helps bring you content every week. Also, just following on social media, which you can find me on just about every social media at creepycases.spookyspaces, but liking, sharing, commenting, telling your friends, telling your family, telling your fellow fiends, getting them in on the conversation, that definitely helps as well. Plus, buying any of the merchandise in the Wiccan Fae shop. And that's, you know, the Creepy Cases merchandise, that's the Wiccan Fae candles, the books that I have on there, just any of that also helps. And it's super, super appreciated. And I just love you all for all of the support. Thank you so much. And if you are a small business or a big business, because like I've said before, everyone is welcome here. I don't discriminate. I do have some ad space coming up in next season's episodes, which the next season should hopefully start around May. So maybe a little before, just depends on how life goes. So you never know. But definitely send me an email, creepycases.spookyspaces@gmail.com, and I can send you a list of all of my packages that we can get set up for you. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Skylar Annette Neese was born February 10th, 1996, just north of Morgantown, West Virginia, to David and Mary Neese. She was a thriving young lady, an honors student with a 4.0 grade point average at University High School. She was hardworking with a bright future and wanted to be a criminal defense lawyer. She worked part-time at the local Wendy's. She loved to read, and she had a very active social life. Her dad described her as a very bubbly person, very loyal to her friends and the people she thought were her friends. She was very lively. She was also an only child with a great home and family life. Her parents were nurturing and encouraging her in every way they could. Now, she had two best friends, Sheila Eddy, who had known Skylar since she was 8 years old, and Rachel Schoaf, whom she met her freshman year of high school in 2010. And the girls were inseparable and often referred to as the Three Musketeers. They were constantly posting photos of themselves on social media, all smiles, having a great time sharing secrets, dreams, and teenage adventures. And who doesn't love that? You know, growing up, having great friends, getting out, doing things, being social, being active. You know, it's the best time of your life, basically. The Mary Neese said Skylar felt like she was the emotional support for the other two girls who came from divorced family backgrounds, but she was also their voice of reason, and she could be heard giving them advice when on the phone. Now, Sheila Eddy was a fun-loving teenager who was one of the family, and they say that she didn't even knock when she would come over to the house. Rachel Schoaf was well-liked and talented. She loved to perform in school productions, but she came from a strict Catholic family, so she was a little more reserved than the other two girls, and it's said that she idolized Sheila for having such a carefree approach to life. Now, the girls earned the term rowdy. They didn't get into any like real trouble, but you know, they would sneak out after curfew, they partied a little bit, they drank a little bit, and did drugs, which the only real drug I could see that they did was smoke pot. But let's be honest, smoking pot isn't really anything wild, so I wouldn't say that they were, you know, addicted to drugs or anything like that. Now, things seemed to be getting a little tense between the friends. Posts made on social media gave a glimpse of things kind of going on behind the scenes. And Skylar posted, "You're a two-faced bitch and obviously stupid if you thought I wouldn't find out." Another said, "Too bad my friends are having lives without me." And a tweet the day before she went missing stated, "All I do is hope." So it seemed that Skylar felt like the other two girls were excluding her, and things didn't seem as fun and carefree as they were originally projected. A classmate, Daniel Hovatter, said that Sheila and Skylar had actually started fighting a lot, and he told of a time when Rachel was at rehearsals, and she told him she was listening in on a conversation that was going on between Sheila and Skylar, and Skylar didn't actually know she was listening, but she was just kind of laughing and kind of making fun that they were fighting so much. Now, July 5th, 2012, it was a typical day for Skylar. She worked an evening shift at Wendy's. When she came home, she kissed her parents goodnight and retired to her bedroom. Now, this would sadly be the last time David and Mary would see their daughter alive. The following afternoon, David knocked on Skylar's door so he could lend her the family car. Only there was no answer from the inside. And when he tried to open the door to make sure everything was okay, he found it was locked, which was unusual. He used a coat hanger to let himself in, finding the bed had not been slept in. David immediately called Mary, who wasn't surprised. Like I said, Skylar was very social, had quite a few friends, but so she assumed that Skylar had left and was likely out with Shelia and Rachel at a party or shopping. However, later that day, when David stepped out into the garden to have a smoke, he noticed something odd. The fact that Skylar's window was wide open caught his eye, and the screen was missing, which was actually found hidden in her closet a little bit later, and a bench had been pushed up underneath the window, which normally wasn't there. And this was when David realized that Skylar had actually snuck out the night before and hadn't returned home. And when they found that she also didn't show up for work, which was a first for the teenager, that's when they began to worry and called Star City Police Department to report her missing. Now, of course, police originally thought Skylar had just run away and didn't believe she was in any danger, but David and Mary were adamant that she wouldn't run away. Plus, all of her stuff was there. Her everything, you know, her phone charger was there. So, you know, the only thing that was missing was her phone. So I'm going to go out and say if she didn't take her charger, she's not running away. Also, let me just say, it irks me when families will tell police that, you know, the missing family member wouldn't just go and leave. And I get it, some people do just up and leave, but more times than not, something has happened, and I feel that police need to take it a little more seriously in those instances. Plus, excuse me. Plus, Skylar is 16 years old. This isn't just, you know, this isn't an adult who just decided to go. Now, Shelia and her mother actually helped search the neighborhood on July 7th. She went door to door asking if anyone had seen her missing friend. She comforted David and Mary. She helped put up flyers, and she was very active in the search. Now, Rachel couldn't help out because she actually had left for Catholic summer camp and would be gone for the next 2 weeks. So officers obtained surveillance footage from James Place Apartments, where the niece family lived, and this shows the last known photo and video of Skylar. In the video, you can see that Skylar climbs out of a window around 12:30 in the morning, gets into the back seat of a sedan, and it drives away. Now, not too much later, it was found that this vehicle belonged to one of Skylar's friends, Shelia Eddy. Now, Shelia admitted that she picked Skylar up, and along with Rachel, they drove around town, smoking, getting high, but they dropped her back off about an hour later, and saying that Skylar was insistent on being dropped off down the road so she wouldn't wake her parents up. I'm sure we've all done that. Except there's no footage of Skylar returning home. So this is where the family began to wonder. Was this the moment that something happened? Did she get taken while she was walking back to the apartment? Now, Officer Jessica Colbank, though, wasn't buying Shelia and Rachel's story. She told 2020, quote, their stories were verbatim, the exact same. No one's story is going to be exactly the same unless it's been rehearsed. Everything in my gut was, Shelia is acting wrong and Rachel is scared to death. She found Shelia's demeanor suspicious, describing her as just complete blank on emotions, and there was absolutely nothing. It was like iced over. She told Mary and David that she thought the girls were hiding something. Police Chief Vic Probst told Huffington Post, quote, "We know she left voluntarily from the surveillance tape, but we have not been able to account for her whereabouts since then." He continued saying that the department had spent close to 400 man hours on the case, following over 160 pieces of information, but there was just no concrete leads. The family and friends, members of the community, put up more posters and set up a Facebook page, and police began monitoring Skylar's social media, her bank account, and her phone. But there was no movement on any of them. And this is where I say, you know, if you think that she just up and ran away, clearly, you know, there would be money coming out of the account, her phone would be in use, social media, that's little, you know, maybe then, maybe here, maybe there, but that's not a big point. Now, the FBI and the West Virginia State Police joined the search in September. Rumors began swirling that Skylar had actually overdosed on heroin at a party, but Corporal Ronnie Gaskins said reports came in that when she died, people at the party panicked and disposed of her body. But of course, that lead went nowhere, and police didn't really put too much clout into it. This was when attention was turned towards the two teens, Shelia and Rachel. The community began to put pressure on them, but without any actual proof, no arrests could be made. So the family continued on holding out hope, living every day in agonizing limbo, not knowing what happened to their child, and just wishing she would come home. Now, Chris Berry, a state trooper who had been assigned to the case, believed that no murderer can keep their actions a secret for very long, and some even brag about their actions, which I've done many cases, I've researched many, many, many more, I've watched all the, and that's pretty true. Like, there's very few people who don't tell anybody. Now, he had a feeling that this was one of those instances, thinking that Rachel and or Shelia would spill some point soon. He created a fake online persona, a teenage boy who attended West Virginia University, and they used this access to look into what the girls were posting. Now, some posts struck them as odd, and one from November 5th read, "No one on this earth can handle me. And Rachel, if you think you can, you're wrong." It seemed there may be some issues growing between the two girls. Now, not long after, Shelia and Rachel started hearing things that began to make them nervous. Some were outright accusing them of murdering Skylar, telling the girls it was only a matter of time until they'd be caught. Now, this caused the girls to kind of isolate themselves and only depend on each other for support. Investigators spoke to the girls multiple times, and it was during one of these interviews they caught them in a couple of lies. Now, the story that they told before, they said that they had picked Skylar up at 11 and dropped her back off right around midnight, saying that they were positive this was the time of events. Except that time of the surveillance footage proved this to be incorrect, and we know that Skylar didn't sneak out until about 12:30. Surveillance near Blackstone, West Virginia shows Shelia's car. Now, Blackstone is west of Star City, and the girls were adamant that they went east. So that's another inconsistency. On December 28th, Rachel had a nervous breakdown. Patricia Schoaf called 911 saying, "I have an issue with a 16-year-old daughter of mine. I can't control her anymore. She's hitting us, she's screaming, she's running through the neighborhood." Now, while Patricia is telling the operator all of this, you could actually hear Rachel in the background yelling, "Give me the phone. No, no, this is over. This is over." Patricia told the operator that her husband was trying to contain Rachel and to please hurry. Rachel ended up being committed to a psychiatric hospital where she was limited on who she could have contact with. And Sheila Eddy was not on that list. On January 3rd, 2013, Rachel was released from the hospital. And this is when she confessed to police and her attorney that she and Sheila had murdered Skylar by stabbing her to death. "We stabbed her," she began. Now, this shocked some of the investigators, but others, as we know, were expecting it. She told detectives that they had planned Skylar's murder about a month prior to carrying it out in science class. She said that one day they just agreed they needed to kill her. Because, you know, just on a whim, I always wake up and just decide I'm just going to go out and murder somebody today. How did that conversation even start? Now, fellow students actually told police that they had heard the girls talking about it, but they said that their demeanor made it seem like they were just kidding and they weren't really serious. I just have to say that if you're out and about anywhere and you overhear somebody saying that they're going to murder somebody, report it. I get it. We've kind of become a society that minds their own business, and that's all good and well, because sometimes you do need to mind your own business. However, in certain instances, you can possibly save a life. And what's worse, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? People aren't serious, and they just claim they're kidding, or they claim whatever, but you just never know. Now, according to Rachel, on the night of the murder, Rachel took her dad's shovel. She grabbed knives from her mom's kitchen, and the girls actually hid these in their hoodies. They also brought paper towels, cleaning cloths, bleach, and clean clothes to change into, after which all was said and done, and this, what they referred to as a serial killer kit, was hidden in the trunk. They lured Skylar out of the house under the guise that they were just going to drive around, hang out, smoke some marijuana. They crossed over the Pennsylvania state line not too long later, heading into Brave, which is a town where they had all been before and hung out. And it's about 30 miles from Skylar's apartment. Now, once they were out of the car, Rachel and Sheila said they had forgotten their lighters. Oh, silly us. Skylar turned to go back and grab one. And this was when the two girls got behind her, counted to three, and began stabbing Skylar in the back. When she tried to run, she only got a few feet before they caught up to her. Trying to fight back, Skylar was able to grab Rachel's knife and cut her in the knee, but Sheila just kept stabbing her. Now, Rachel told police they stabbed Skylar until her neck stopped making gurgly noises, and at one point, Rachel actually said, "Die, bitch." Skylar's post-mortem exam revealed over 50 stab wounds, and she was cut so bad in the throat that she was almost decapitated. At one point, she asked why. And authorities had that same question. And the answers they got were, "We didn't like her," and "We just didn't want to be friends anymore." Okay, and all I have to say is, to my friends, if you ever decide you don't like me or you don't want to be my friend anymore, just tell me. We can go our separate ways. Thank you. Now, once they figured that Skylar was dead, they planned to bury her, but the ground was too hard and had a lot of rocks because it was close to like a creek, like a waterbed. So they dragged her over just a few feet from the road, covering her with branches, dirt, and rocks. And they cleaned up the site, changed clothes, disposing of the bloody ones they were wearing, and headed home, like nothing was wrong. because they're psychopaths. Now, after giving her confession, Rachel told authorities that she would take them to the site and try to find Skylar's remains. Rachel also talked to Shelia wearing a wire, but failed to get her to incriminate herself. According to CBS News, remains were found January 16, 2013, and several weeks later, March 13, 2013, they were identified to be Skylar Neese's remains. Now, this cold brutality shocked the community. These were girls who were never really got in trouble. They were pretty, they were friendly, they had friends, they were good in school, they were just your typical teenagers who, I mean, it just came out of left field. Now, Skylar's parents told Huffington Post that they were devastated and appalled. And I mean, who wouldn't be? I mean, I'm pretty sure that, And they said, quote, "Our whole world is gone. We lived for that girl. We did everything in the world for that girl, and now she's just gone." The Shoaff family released a statement to the Charleston Daily Mail saying, "We are truly sorry for the pain that she has caused the Neese family, and we know her actions are unforgivable and unexcusable." Now, Shelia Eddy at this point was still holding on to her innocence. And the thing is, police decided to search her vehicle, knowing that the last time Skylar was known to be alive was in that car. They found traces of Skylar's blood, and on May 1st, 2013, Shelia was arrested in a Cracker Barrel restaurant parking lot. A tweet of hers was found saying, "We really did go on three." And there's your bragging. And I'm not quite sure why this is such a achievement in her eyes. Both teens were arrested, charged with murder, and would be tried as adults. One thing I find disturbing, and you'll see this, is they're both smiling in their mugshots. That's horrible. That is psychotic. Now, that same day, May 1st, Rachel Shoaff pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. She apologized, stating, "The person that did that was not the real me. I became scared and caught up in something I didn't want to do." She was sentenced to 30 years with the possibility of parole after 10. David Neese said her apologies mean nothing and she can take them and sit on them. Shelia Eddy pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and was sentenced to life with the possibility of parole after 15 years. And now this actually makes me wonder, because Rachel had, I guess, some kind of plea deal, because she didn't get a very, I mean, Shelia got life, Rachel got, you know, 30 years. But I'm wondering if she pushed the idea onto Shelia, or maybe it's because she came forward and gave them all the information. Maybe they just made a deal with her. Now, Shelia is just evil, in my opinion. I mean, they both are, but for as long as she hid her involvement, lied, comforted the family, and of course I know she's just trying to get, you know, trying to push all the attention off of her, but I don't see how somebody can do that while knowing their child would never be coming home. Now, I know that nothing could ever bring closure to the family who's lost a child, and I've talked about it in past episodes. But I'm glad that justice, some kind of justice, was served for Skylar, who was taken in such a brutal manner and at such a young age, and she had such a promising life ahead of her. But what could have driven these two teenagers to commit such a horrendous crime to someone that they were best friends with? The motive is basically they didn't like her and didn't want to be friends with her. But Rachel's 2023 parole hearing stated that she stated that her and Shelia had actually entered into a romantic relationship with each other, and Skylar found out and threatened to tell. And now remember, you know, Rachel came from a strict Catholic family background, but they said that she told them it had disgusted her and they were disgusting and things like that. She said there was a lot of tension in the friendship and it became hostile and violent, and that their young minds just couldn't handle it and they just wanted it to stop. Skylar's mom, Mary, said that the relationship wouldn't have bothered Skylar at all. She had plenty of gay and lesbian friends, and she was accepting, and she loved those girls like family. She would never use it against them in any way or judge them. Jessica Colbank says she believes they killed Skylar just for the thrill of it. Now, David was quoted saying they're both sickos and they're both actually where they need to be, away from civilization, locked up like animals, because that's what they are. They're animals. Now, both girls are being held at Lakin Correctional Center and have no contact with each other. Shoaf was denied parole in 2023, and her release date is set for April 2028. Shelia Eddy still awaits her first parole hearing, which is set for May 2028. Now, David gave a pretty impacting statement at Rachel's hearing, which I'll actually post the link in the show notes if you are interested in checking it out. And you can actually read Rachel's statement to the board as well on that article. He also told the parole board that Rachel nor Shelia deserves a second chance, and has even started an online petition that has over 33,000 signatures. Now, while it's another instance that something horrible had to happen in order for good change to come about, Skylar's parents were actually able to change the law in West Virginia. Now, remember, when Skylar went missing, there was no Amber Alert issued, and police assumed that she was just a runaway. Now, for an Amber Alert to be issued, it has to fit 4 points of criteria. 1, the child had to be believed to be abducted. 2, the child must be under 18. 3, it has to be thought that the child may be in danger of death or serious injury. And 4, sufficient information to indicate an Amber Alert would be helpful. Now, what frustrates me is that in order for police to even take things seriously, they tell you that you have to wait 48 hours to be considered missing. But the first 48 hours are the most crucial. And it's sad to say, but most of the time, if an abductor is going to kill the person they've abducted, they're going to do it within that first 48 hours because they're wanting to do it, get it out of the way, be done, and try their best to hide their crime. So under Skylar's law now, there has to be an Amber Alert for any child under the age of 18 that's considered missing. But of course, we have to consider them missing and not just a runaway. So how about if a family calls and reports their child underage missing, issue the Amber Alert. They ran away. Thank you. Now, David also turned the tree where Skylar was found into a memorial site for her, and he said that he wanted to turn something horrible into something good. And he says that people visiting and leaving their marks means a lot to the family. And on that note, I will see you next crime. You've been listening to Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces, a Pizza and Pigtails production. Created and hosted by Cassie Opea. All episodes researched, written, and edited by yours truly. Don't forget, you can find new episodes of the creepiest and spookiest content every Friday on your favorite podcast listening platform, and now YouTube as well. Subscribe to the Patreon page or the anchor.fm page for as little as $5 a month for bonus episodes every other Tuesday, a merchandise discount, and a Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces thank you swag box. You can also support without subscribing through the Cash App and Venmo. Don't forget to follow along on social media, especially the Facebook and the Instagram page at creepycases.spookyspaces for all future news and updates related to the podcast, and maybe see some content that's not featured here. Like, comment, and share with your fellow fiends to get that conversation started. And on that note, I'll see you next crime.